Hey, I'm Michael Dorinda.
And I'm Jake Bennett.
I'm Daniel Colborne.
And I'm Caleb Porzio.
And welcome to episode 31 of the North Meet South web podcast. Welcome back, everybody, to episode 31 of the North Meet South web podcast. Today we have on the show with us Caleb Porzio and Daniel Colborne. We set out to have a bit of a pre-recording chat in this episode, and as the pre-recording chat went on, we got to about 45 minutes and sort of realized that we had some really good content for an episode. So we don't really have a defined start for the beginning of this show. We're going to drop in right when we were talking about how Daniel got started with his Fits and Starts podcast. So apologies for that, but we hope you enjoy the show. Cheers.
Cool, there we go. So Fits and Starts, yeah, you were explaining to me how that came about.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, it started out as John and I used to... So we went to college together and we would just like come up with an idea for a thing and do about like 1.2 days worth of work on it and then abandon it. And so we were always saying that we worked in fits and starts. And so the whole point of the podcast was that it was going to be a podcast that we would actually do about all of the things that we would never actually do. And so the first couple episodes were like playing Destiny while we record. And like, it was like the first couple episodes are total garbage.
I think they're great.
Some reason people download episode zero like all the time. Like, I think we got like 40 downloads on it like yesterday.
That's funny.
And so they go back and listen to this garbage episode instead of listening to the latest one. So anyway,
that's funny. So like, if people do just like you were talking about, Caleb, people like to just hear people hang out on air, I think.
Yeah, totally. It's the most fun thing. That's exactly what I did with Fits and Starts. I got into it like later on, and then I just went back and listened to zero and one and two, and they're so much fun because they're just chilling and joking around. And yeah. Yep.
I don't know.
How's 20% time been going for you guys?
Solid. It's crazy how, like, I don't know, it's sort of taken off in a small way. I don't know, right? Dan, you know, yeah.
Yeah. That's yeah, how I feel. I mean,
we
just, like,
we have all these discussions in Discuss Dev, which is the Slack channel at Titan where we talk mm-hmm. about developer stuff. And so many of them are like lengthy and really good. And then one time it just got out of hand and Daniel like private Slack messaged me and was like, dude, we're gonna make a podcast. It's gonna be 20 minutes long, it's gonna be called 20% time. He just like listed all these things off and I was like, done. And so that day or the next day, it was recorded and out, which was awesome.
That's the best way to do it.
Yeah, and it did really well. And like the whole process is just so, it almost feels like cheating a little bit because we like get on, we barely plan at all. We just say like a topic and then we get on and we record for 20 minutes what you hear. And then we just, you know, pop it in whatever, yep. GarageBand.
My edit on that takes 20 minutes tops. It's literally just like finding the beginning and end of the topic. Yeah. And like usually the end is just when we hang
right,
up.
Yeah, we're like,
so
right.
It's literally just like finding the beginning of the topic and then like fading the music into the beginning and fading the music into the end and then bouncing an MP3.
Yeah, you know? I really look forward to it, actually. I really enjoy the show. It's been awesome. You guys have had some really good discussions on there, and I think it's spawned a lot of discussions in the community too. I feel like we reference it on a regular basis when we're talking about stuff for Laravel News because we're like, oh, there's this pull request out there and like this has a lot to do with what those guys were talking about on 20% time. So yeah, it's been really cool. I really love that show. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. At that conference I was at last week, I think two people said they were listeners, which just kind of blew my mind because in my mind, nobody listens to it. Like, it's just not something that people listen to at all. And then somebody references it and it's, you know, it's fascinating.
So, you know, you don't get any feedback. You get the numbers in Simplecast and maybe they go up week on week, but you don't really know that anyone actually cares about what you're talking about.
Right.
So,
yep.
We're slowly starting to get to that point now.
What's that? You're getting to that point where
we're,
you know, people
we're
are,
getting, yeah, just now.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I mean, I never give feedback on podcasts. Well, I never did before. Like, I was a hardcore listener to Laracast Snippet and the Laravel podcast, of course, and the Laravel News podcast in and out before you guys. And I never gave any sort of feedback. I never, you know, they had no idea that I religiously listened and knew every episode and, you know.
Yeah, do you listen to Adam's show too? I'm sure you do. You
must. That too, because, I listen to all of that.
Because we kind of talked about that on Twitter. You were like, well, what were we talking about? We were talking about, was it on Twitter or was it on a Telegram? You were saying basically like a good way that you feel like to learn is to just pick somebody as almost like a mentor and just kind of like absorb all of their everything that they put out there. So like, you know, you look at his refactoring to collections, you go through his testing course, you're following all of his streams for Kite Tail, and then it's like before you know it, you're like a Adam Wathen clone, for better or for worse, right? Like all of his little you know, his little hills that he chooses to die on with pythons and all that stuff.
My favorite.
It's fun watching him stream as well, because obviously he's Canadian and it doesn't really come through in his podcast, but when you're watching him stream, he says A a lot more. It's funny.
Does he really?
From that perspective, yeah. But I put in my notice at my current job 2 weeks ago, so I've kind of run out of stuff to do. And so I was sitting there and watching his live stream the other day.
Right.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, I watched those in and out. I was doing it pretty hardcore for the first first maybe couple weeks. It's always good, you know. It's good stuff to just stop by.
It's good just to see someone else write code, so.
Yeah, for sure. Especially him. He's got that brain.
Oh my gosh, he's so fast. Yeah. Like I've paired with him maybe 2 times, and it is unbelievable how fast that man can move through an editor. It's just insane.
Yeah. What's crazy to me is how he debugs. Like he debugs smarter than I do.
What do you mean?
Which is kind of annoying. Like I've only paired with him once, and it was on just like a brain bender weird problem. And like I just needed to pair with someone, and it was, you know, 6:30 or 7 or something, and everyone was gone, and I was like, Adam, can you help me with this? I'm losing my mind. And so he jumped in, and what it turned out to be was that, like, because I forget exactly what it was, but it was somehow I was getting Global Composer to like pull in the wrong version of PHP unit, which was causing me to accidentally pull in dependencies from some global Laravel project. So anyway, long story short, I was getting like the wrong version of something and getting a totally it was Laravel Mix. I was getting like an inscrutable Laravel Mix error because of Jigsaw.
Right.
Was what was happening. But the way he jumped in, like, the way he debugged it was like, it didn't make any more sense to him than it made to me, except that he debugged it just better than I did. You know, like every step along the way, he had like the right next small incremental step where we could learn like just enough about the bug to like move on to the next step, which I guess makes, you know, I guess that qualifies him to write a TDD course because he's good at reading errors. But
I think the thing that was most impressive to me, and I think it's like a sublime thing, but like he doesn't read documentation on the Laravel stuff. And I think, Caleb, you're probably kind of heading towards that same direction, right? Where it's like everything is source diving. Like if you have a question, pretend like the documentation doesn't even exist. You're going into the class and like looking at all the methods and then diving a little bit deeper. Yeah. So that was really interesting to me because when we were pairing, I think that was exactly what happened. Like we discovered a feature while we were pairing. He's like, wonder if we could do that. He's like, I wonder if there's a method named this. And so he didn't even go to a class. I think he just searched in Sublime, like, you know, look for a method named this. And then he's like, yep, there it is. He's like, you know, it's so funny because with Laravel, you can do that. Like Taylor names all of the methods so succinctly and so
intuitively named.
So Taylor
common sense. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You can just kind of look for the name of a method and assume it's going to be there if it's, you know, if you have the ability to do something.
Right.
That's pretty cool. I've also liked, Caleb, all your stuff on Twitter, like all of your little screenshots.
Tips.
Yeah. Those are cool. And actually, this is funny. I'm building every time I get a good tip like this. So I put it in a Twitter moment.
Okay.
And then I'm going to release it sometime here.
Oh. What is a Twitter moment?
Have you ever seen a moment?
If you go to
Twitter and then like there's a little lightning bolt, this will like you can have moments which are like Judge Upholds ruling that Brendan Dassey's confession, blah blah blah, whatever, which sucks. But it's got all the tweets that are related to that in a little thing.
Okay.
And then you can share it, and it's actually really nice on mobile. It looks really good on mobile.
Okay.
And So what I'm doing is I'm just calling it Laravel Quick Tips. I think that's what I'm calling it. It's the name of my moment. And so then I can, it's whenever I want to, I can just publish that moment. Yeah. So I think, let me see if I can.
I always just wrote this off as Twitter's like newsfeed thing that I accidentally scroll to every so often.
Mm-hmm.
But I did not see that create new moment button in the top right. And that, yeah, wow.
I'm wondering if I can share this with you guys just to see if you can see what it looks like. No, looks like I can't at all. Maybe some other time. But yeah, it's pretty neat. Even if it's only for me, right. you can do it that way. So you basically can have a little aggregate of tweets where you can say like, huh, these are all related to Laravel, and
nice.
Instead of, you know, just favoriting them and hoping you remember, you can right. throw them into a little moment. And the nice thing is like if you click the little arrow in the top right corner of a tweet, it'll allow you to specify which moment, and it'll say like add it to your Laravel Quick Tips moment, like that's right cool. there. Yeah.
For me, like, I mean, Twitter is like, I didn't know about moments, so I treat it as this repository of useful tips. So like anything, so my little like train of thought is if it's like a cool tip that I want to remind myself of, I retweet it. And so like when I retweet things, it's often not for the purposes of like spreading it, which it, you know, it is too. But like for me, it's like, okay, I need to log this. Even if I don't want to share it, like I have to retweet it because otherwise it's going to be yeah. lost forever, you know? And a like is just like a form of approval for me. It's like, hey, this is cool. Like I want to shout, like, yeah. I don't know. It's like poking.
Yeah.
But yeah, like the retweet is the keeping it in my log. And then I personally post things, of course, to share and everything and build the audience and whatever, and just connect with people. But it's also just to create my own log of like useful stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. But it seems to be becoming like a popular thing. Like, and maybe it was always popular and I just was never paying attention to it. But I know Adam, yeah. like he was the quick tipper guy, like with the screenshots and the flame emoji things. And like, yeah. that's where I picked it up. That's where I was like, this is such a great plat. I don't know. It's like a great way to share knowledge. It's so like shorthand and useful and distilled.
Yeah.
And yeah, but then like, I don't know, Steve Shulgar out of nowhere is posting all these ridiculously awesome design tips.
Yeah.
And
and Wes Bowers, I think, is where Adam attributes it coming from. Yeah. I don't know where it was before that.
Okay.
Because was it Wes Boss or, yeah, I think it was. But he was just talking about basically sharing content, like where people are at. So instead of saying like, hey, here's a quick article I found, here's a link to it, mm-hmm. like take a screenshot, share the content where people are at, like don't make them go somewhere else to consume it,
right?
And just like providing them value, right? It's kind of like that Gary Vaynerchuk, what's his name, Gary
Vaynerchuk.
Yeah, like he yeah. basically, you know, he uses that you know, provide value, like jab 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 right hook is his book,
right?
So like provide value and then make an ask. Right. And people are going to be much more likely to buy if you've provided a lot of value for them than they would be if you're just like, totally. Hey, I'm some spammy dude showing up telling you to buy my course or whatever.
When I mean, I'm sure, I don't know about you guys, when Adam came out with his first book and his second book, well, his course, but when he came out with the first book, like, you know, we were following it. I got that first email, like I was already sold, even if I didn't ever read it, like I was going to pay for it. It was just going to happen.
Yeah. I'm tragic for that. Like, I love everything that he's doing and I just want him to be like successful in what he's doing. So if I just give him money, then maybe right. he'll be successful. And then maybe one day that favor will get returned when it's my turn. So no, I still haven't watched his test-driven Laravel course, but I paid $160 or whatever it was Australian. Yep. So
right.
This is funny. So I'm looking back through a Telegram message that I had with Adam and we were talking about, so that he was writing some messages to me and he says, I'm going to make a tweet out of that. Emoji plus tip plus GIF screenshot equals infinite retweets. This was like, was in March of 2016, right? Like, so over a year ago, like he had figured out this, you know, the winning combination of how to get these retweets. And so he's been doing it for a while and I think it works well for him.
I didn't know it was a formula until one of his recent streams on Friday or Tuesday or whatever. And he was being really sarcastic. He did something really cool and he's like, oh yeah, I'll probably, well, he was like kind of stuck on something. He wasn't sure if this thing was possible in Laravel. He's like, I'll just come back to it. You know, if I find it, then I'll, you know, I'll take a screenshot. I'll post it on Twitter. I'll put a flame emoji and I'll like feel good about myself, you know? And he said it in like this really dry way that was like, I've been here like so many times. Like, it's just like his own amusement that he's doing this. And
yeah,
I don't know.
And it works though. Like any of those tweets that I put out myself, they are always like ridiculously over retweeted and they drive that conversation as well.
Right.
I think the one that I had today was probably the most successful conversation I've ever had.
That was crazy.
I've had more like maybe favorites and stuff than what I had today on that one, but this was by right. far the most valuable for me. Like I felt like,
yeah. But how many of those led to a Laracon title fight?
This is true. So it's going to be a 3-way fight. Me, Daniel, and David Hemphill with a bare knuckle cage match on the stage. Well, you have judo training and David has MMA training, jiu-jitsu, I think. And I am, I think I took a week of karate training at the YMCA when I was...
You got
when this. I was in second grade.
I have about as much judo training as I have long division training. like I stopped learning both around the same time.
Yeah, so that Perfect. Should be fun. I've been teasing David that I'm going to fight him for like, you know, since I think since I found out he was an MMA fighter, I actually have this amazing gif of him kicking some dude in the face and knocking him out in the actual fight that he had. Yeah, it's pretty incredible.
That's great.
I'm going to have to find that and share it with you guys.
You definitely
have
to do that.
All right. Let me see if I can... I'm going to put it in the Telegram chat. Hold on.
Like, how do you work well with that tweet going on today? It was like, it was nonstop. Everybody just kept weighing in. And like, I spent a good 10 minutes trying to figure out like my own funny approach to it. And, you know, I don't know. It was just a good time.
Yeah, it was interesting to hear like so many different opinions. And there are, I mean, after thinking about it, I was like, okay, there is at least 4 different ways I can think of that are common. So you have the view global helper and then the name of the view that you're going to pass in, comma, the array, like that you're going to do it, where you actually, the array of data that you're going to pass in,
right?
Where you actually specify the keys and the values. Or there's a second way, which is what I tend to use a lot of times, which is compact.
Right.
And you just pass in, you know, into compact the names of the temp variables that you have declared later earlier on in your controller method, and then it will create a keyed array for you. And then there is the, you know, you can use the global helper, specify the name of the view that you're going to use, and then you arrow with and then include a name and the variable that you're going to do.
Right.
Or you can do the magic with, where you say like with products and then include just the products variable. And then in addition to that, you have view composers, which somebody mentioned, which I thought was interesting, where they said, if we have more than 3, we use a view composer, which I was like,
And I hate view composers.
Yeah, it's because they're magic, right? Yeah. Like you never know they're there. Like you have to.
Like I've tripped myself up on them bad. Like and I regret using them. I don't know.
Yeah, Arrows Array is probably the only one that I like because it's always there, right? That's composed in, I imagine.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a good use case for it. Yeah, that is interesting though. Like there's these 4 factions. And, you know, you tweet out this thing and everybody quickly kind of aligned. Like, this is a conversation that we had in Discuss Dev a couple months ago where I just posted in there innocently like, hey, guys, what do you think? Do you use with or do you use the array or something like that? And it just...
There are no innocent questions.
Right, yeah. And it turned into this crazy thing. War. And I quoted him from that conversation, actually looked it up today and went back to it. And it's pretty much the same conversation. It was a mirror of the conversation that's happening on Twitter. I don't know. It's just fascinating. And like the different backgrounds, like then you came out, Jacob, and were like, you know, I'm a compactor because Jeffrey's a compactor.
Yeah.
And I was totally a compactor because Jeffrey was a compactor and I did it because he did it for so long. And then Matt, like in a pull request or in a pairing session was like, yo, no on the compact. So I had to wash that out of me.
There are definitely things like that like I've really enjoyed and then they just like clash with either Matt's style or like Samantha does a lot of my code review, either like her style or Matt's style. And if I like run against their style like more than 3 times, it's like, all right, I'm tired of seeing this comment in my code review. Like I just changed the way I care about this.
Whatever.
And then you do that for a month and then everything else looks wrong.
No,
like now I have to do the with. Like with is the only way for me.
So Adam came and, you know, said that thing about mutability and I think he has a knack for explaining these things that I don't know. Like I would never think of this returning a view in terms of mutability. I just never would.
Yeah.
But you know, he's like, this feels like when I use the with, it feels like a mutable thing. He always like adds those like kind of like and then a really concrete thing, mutable, you know? Like it's kind of like sort of feels like mutable. And but then he's like, that's why I like the array syntax, because you feel like you're passing it all at once. And anyway, I've been straight array syntax ever since. So
yeah,
I think that's a good, I actually, so it's funny because I today went back to some code. I was like reviewing one of my junior devs code and I was like, he used compact and I was like, that's not a good use there. Like, cause he was passing in like a bunch of stuff. I'm like, yeah, let's not do that. Yeah. So we ended up using the array syntax. And I was like, it made so much more sense to do it there. And then we did it in, we inlined it. Right. So instead of like assigning temporary variables earlier on, we just did the array and then, you know, did the assigning right there in the array. So it worked really well. It looked so much cleaner. And I was like, wow, that's incredible. So I've even derived a value from that conversation like a lot today, even today. Yeah.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah. I was going to say for me, Vue Composers, kind of going back to that, the only times that I've used Vue Composers has been when I needed, let me think here. So if I had like a sidebar or something and I didn't want to have to explicitly pass in every time those same variables that the sidebar needs in every view that I'm going to use the sidebar in, I'll use a Vue Composer and say like, you know, this is a sidebar Vue Composer and I'll pass the variables in that way. That's been helpful. There is a couple other times where it's like, I want to have something always in, if you've ever used Jeffrey Way's JavaScript injector, like PHP to JS vars.
Yeah, I was all about that.
One second. Sorry, I'm writing down something that I'm going to forget. Okay, so what I've done is at times I'll have, I'll use a Vue Composer for that. So, because in the Vue Composer, you can say JavaScript and then you can inject like the user always into the JavaScript from a Vue Composer. And you can say for these particular views, inject that JavaScript into the into there, which that's been helpful. That's really nice because I don't have to declare it every single time on the on the whatever.
Well, then, like, so you know, Taylor's Laravel global JavaScript thing that got added. And that's kind of an answer to that. And I saw, like, I read through the Spark source before that was in Laravel. And he did that in Spark. He had, like, a global Spark JavaScript object that just contained everything you need about the current plan, like some permission stuff, the current user. And then it came into Laravel. And I think it's out now. I think he might have taken it out. But I really like it. I like that just... like there's a, it's like the bridge between PHP and JavaScript. It's like well-defined and here it is, you know, it's not sort of scattered throughout Vue Composer. So I don't know.
I think it's in the Bootstrap JS, I think is where that lives or lived.
It used to live in the like index file or in like layout, you know, app.layout or whatever. It used to be right in a script tag.
Okay. Yeah. And I'm trying to remember too, like, I would be sometimes frustrated because I remember I would like, they would have the CSRF and it'd have that. And the only way I could ever get like that one layout file was to do like auth make. And then it was like, it would magically like give you that layout, that app.layout file or whatever, .blade. And so then I would just like take that and then destroy all the crap, the other crap that I made.
Right.
And just use that as like my base layout.
Totally.
You know, and extend everything from there.
I can't wait to construct React for my views. Like, I just can't wait for 5.5. Like, I had something today where like I love Samantha's posts, but I'm so tired of going and looking up Samantha's blog post and doing it every time I want to like test something.
So do you guys use React like, quite a bit?
Not this guy.
Yeah, I think we're about 50-50.
He's that 50, I'm the other 50.
Your view all the way, Caleb.
I've never done any React to Titan.
Neither
ever
have I.
And that's all Daniel does is React.
That's all I do. I've probably written more React than Laravel since I've been at Titan.
Interesting.
But that's just because I've been on some very Reacty projects.
And are you in love? Are you completely in love with it?
I really like it. And like now I'm finally like, so I had never written React before I got to Titan. So like I came in on like a front end project with Samantha and she was basically like, all right, kid, we're teaching you React. Like, So I learned React and like we started, you know, working on stuff and now I'm comfortable enough with React that like I'm starting to like build my own little tools and stuff for it, you know, and now I like feel like the world is like completely opened up to me, you know, like I'm now seeing weaknesses in like different styles. And
right.
You know, like I know enough React to like have an opinion about it now and I love it.
You've kind of crossed that threshold, right? You feel like you were offered the red or the blue pill and you took the blue pill and down the rabbit hole you went and now you're totally a React fan. Yeah, that's...
It was the teal or the blue pill.
Oh, teal. Sorry. That's really interesting. I've wanted to try it. It's just, for me, it's just finding the time to like have to waste on it. I mean, I hate to say waste, but you know, like you have to make the investment, right? To get to that point where you can actually be educated enough about it to say, oh, okay, now I can see the difference between Vue and React. And for me, like pragmatically, it's just easier to say, okay, like everybody in the Laravel community does Vue, or a lot, the vast majority, right? Or, you know, the same resources that I use to ask questions about Laravel stuff, I can ask those people about Vue stuff. It's just a lot more of like a natural fit for me because I don't work on a team that has a React expert like Samantha's, like Miss React, right? So that's a really cool opportunity though, to be able to work with Samantha and basically have an awesome mentor to learn that stuff. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, well, I think so I've worked with Samantha on every project, and I think you've worked with Keith on most projects, right, Caleb?
So I'm Team Vue,
And so I think it's about time for us to like switch senior devs so that you can be forced to write a bunch of React and I could like write Vue with Keith and see what happens.
These factions sort of emerged as a joke, but like React and Vue, like, you know, at the end of the day, they're component front end framework. So like if all the things that people love about React is, you know, we love the same things about Vue. It's like, you know, the jQuery killers were like,
or the Angular killers,
more importantly.
I'm still writing jQuery now because I'll just look at it and go, I don't really want to pull in Vue, and jQuery is already there because Bootstrap's already there in a scaffold of Laravel app. So I may as well just sprinkle some of that in and do what limited stuff I need to do. And I always feel gross about it, but I've been using jQuery for such a long time that sometimes it's easier just to spin out some two-line jQuery thing than it is to create a new component and go that way.
Totally.
And I'm kind of at the point now where I don't want to write blade templates anymore. It feels like a waste of time to write a blade template.
Where are you putting a React component if you don't have a blade component? I mean, come on.
In the one div that I will write.
Div app. Div ID equals app.
No, like I'll write one div for each component.
There you go. Yeah.
Div ID equals post.
So for me with Vue, it's I really enjoy it. Michael, I was like, you know, I was a hardcore jQuery. You know, jQuery was like the thing, even like 5 years ago. Yeah. You know, 5 years ago, jQuery was like really one of the, I don't know, I can't say one of the few options. You had Backbone and Angular was starting to kind of be a thing, I guess. But I learned a lot about, I would go on Stack Overflow and be like, how do you do this in jQuery? And they're like, well, here's how you do it in vanilla JavaScript. And it's like, oh, okay. And Andy Asmani had all those posts about different JavaScript patterns, right? Like the revealing module pattern and all those different things. And I remember previous to reading a bunch of those posts, like everything was just spaghetti jQuery all over the place. So it helped me to kind of get a better structure with my jQuery stuff. And then it felt like a very natural transition to Vue because it feels very similar. The Vue, kind of how you say new Vue, and then you're passing in an object and everything is like, you know, everything just looks exactly like what it would be if you were doing like a module pattern sort of jQuery thing. So it was an easy transition for me. Having said that, it has been a challenge with like how you integrate it completely while using Blade and wanting to use some of the helpers that are available to you in Blade. Like one of the big things that held me back was validation. Because I just loved the Laravel way of doing validation, it was so easy. I never even had to think about it. It was like, okay, in my controller, this validate, here's the rules, done. If it doesn't work, it's going to pass it back with the errors. It's going to display it, done. Piece of cake, no worries. And with Vue, it's just, so Frek has a package out there that makes the validation stuff sort of easier, but I haven't done it, you know, done it myself yet. So that's kind of the one thing that's a little bit like holding me back from like just everything is a component on my page. So I'm still working on it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's a few things that shouldn't be components, you know? Like, you know, you do want to have an app that works if JavaScript doesn't exist.
Maybe you do.
So like, you know, graceful degradation is good and everything. I'm just saying like, personally, I don't want to write Blade.
Yeah.
You know, like I like Blade more than I like, you know, writing... you know, PHP, writing in like PHP in my views or whatever.
I'm the opposite now. The last app I worked on was all Vue, and so every Blade file was a Vue component.
Yeah, but it wasn't all React, like, Caleb.
Well, right. So it was all Vue, and I felt like it just feels fragile to me. Not that it's fragile, it's not, and it's totally good, and writing it is great and all that. But when I dared myself to, like, go back into just Blade, like, whoa, it just felt so solid. Like, I just know this is always there and it's going to work and it loads instantly and you can do a lot. Like, and so for now, for me, it's like the starting point. Like, I do that as far until I have to. And even like jQuery or raw JavaScript, you can get so far. But like, for me, it's if I need a form, like if you have a form and you need to be able to add an indefinite amount of something, that's for me, it's like, all right, I'm using Vue because I'm not going to do this by hand because it's just the worst for me. Anytime I have to have like an ID that's a random key or something, you know, like to attach a click handler and stuff. Yeah, like, that's when I just go to Vue.
I can't do that anymore. I'm totally with you. Anytime, like, if I have to reach for like a click handler, I'm like, nope. Yep. I abandoned that hell a long time ago. It was like so horrible. Like, seriously, like trying to manage the state using the DOM is just so insane.
Right.
It's so insane. So I'm curious though. So do you use inline templates then? So do you kind of, you know, I'm getting started with like my first Spark app, and I'm looking at how Taylor kind of did all that stuff.
Right.
And
the inline template version. I don't know what it's at now, but last time I looked, it was like all inline templates.
Yeah. All of it is.
Right. Okay.
So is that how you do yours or no?
I don't think you can, right? Like, because of the way that Laravel comes bootstrapped right now, Vue gets initialized like up front. So if you define an inline template, you have to store the JavaScript file separately and load it like up front. Okay, so here's the problem. I would use inline templates if I could write the component in that blade file. You know, if I could have a script tag that defined that component in that blade file. Does that make sense?
Yep.
But I can't do that because Vue is already initialized. So I would have to create a separate file just for the JavaScript, like in Spark. Like every component is... And so I feel like if I have a separate file for JavaScript, I'm just going to, you know, do the single file view component thing.
Yeah.
So I do single file view components, when I get there.
I think the difficulty that you lose there is then you lose like the ability to do any blade directives in your...
Yeah, right. And that's then I just leverage properties. Zangle put out a post a while ago that it seems so obvious, but I didn't really think it was fair playing, but just like pass properties from blade, you know, when you define the component in your blade template, define properties for everything you need. So whatever the blade directive is that you needed, pass it through a prop. So the big one for me is routes. Like, I don't have access to route naming in my view templates, right? And that's a huge problem. So I just create a prop called whatever URL I need, you know, and then I just access the props is that's the bridge between Laravel and Vue is now properties. And Zangle has a really good post on it. I think Jesse Shutt wrote it, and it kind of opened my eyes to like, oh, you can do this middle ground well. You don't have to make your own APIs for every single interaction.
Yeah.
That's been an interesting problem I've been trying to solve too. And we actually talked about that. Michael, where did we talk about that? Was it North Meet South or was it Laravel News?
Yeah, I think it was on North Meet South.
We talked about basically sharing routes through. Between Laravel and Vue. That's a good way to do it, Caleb. And I've kind of done that a couple times, but my question was, what you suggested there completely solves the problem. It really does. But the question I posed was, is there a way basically to do exactly what we do in Laravel in Vue, where we just say route and whatever?
I think everybody who's done this enough like has that exact fantasy.
Yeah.
Like, there must be a way.
There were some really good solutions, actually. Who are we talking about that way? Like, I'm trying to remember. I think we talked about it on this Slack channel we share with a couple of people called Cash Money Cowork. Shout out David Hemphill. And he talked about it, and we shared kind of some code that a listener had written in. And I think it pretty much accomplished what that goal is, you know, right? Being able to do this exact same thing. I haven't tried it. I haven't actually pulled it into a project yet. So I'll let you know if it actually works out. Maybe we'll put that in the show notes for anybody who wants to check it out. Yeah.
Sweet.
Okay. I wrote down something that I was going to forget. You guys might remember that. So I remember one of the things you guys were talking about, how Matt has kind of dissuaded you guys from the use of Compact. I remember I was working on GistLog, and I used to do this all the time where I would have just a single line JavaScript statement. So I would be like, you know, like one of the things that I would do in JavaScript on a fairly regular basis is return false, like an early return.
Okay.
So I'll do like some conditional check, right? Like, so if this value is blank, just return false. Like, don't go any further. And I would put that on a single line with no brackets, no anything. Right. Just like if name is equal to nothing, return false, right? Just no curly braces or anything needed. And I remember I put that in, and Matt was like, no, let's put that on a separate line. And I was like, really? Why? Like, what's the, he's like, oh, it's like PSR2. I was like, PSR2 is like PHP though, right? He's like, yeah. It's just for consistency. And so now I don't do that anymore, and I kind of miss it. Like, but that's definitely,
yeah.
It's funny. Like you said, after a certain amount of time, here, like you can't not do it and see it as wrong, right? That was exactly me. What were you saying, Daniel?
So Matt has never, as far as I recall, Matt has never told me to write PSR2 JavaScript, but I think just talking to Matt a lot and like having him look at my code, like my taste has just like evolved to be more like Matt's, just like by evolution, right? Like survival of the fittest. My taste is a lot like Matt's now. And so I recently have just started like putting, like moving braces around and like putting trailing commas in arrays and doing things where it's like, I don't want to have to think about like, am I in JavaScript or PHP? So basically anywhere in JavaScript that I can do something that complies with PSR2, I'm doing it.
Yeah.
Because like I'm tired of like code switching between the two of them.
No, I think that's good. I think it's a good thing to do. You know, I really do like not having to context switch between which one you're in, I think is a very helpful thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm with you too. Like trailing commas, like all that stuff, like it does make it far easier. And now that I've been doing it for a while, it's just, I can't see a single line anymore without braces and not think like, nah, that doesn't feel right.
Yeah, especially when you're spending so much time between the two. I think especially in Laravel land, you are going to use a lot of JavaScript and you are going to use a lot of Vue and you are going to jump into your PHP controllers and your models and things like that. So the more everything looks similar, the easier it's going to be, you know, less cognitive overhead, easier to switch context and things like that. So,
and I know you guys are not as obsessed with resources as Caleb and I are, but this is why it's so important to have resource methods in JavaScript that match up with Laravel resource methods so that you can just have the same just names for all your methods. Everything's just the same.
Didn't you put something out about this just the other day? Did you have some little...
Yeah, because I just tweeted like a little... I made a little NPM package that's literally just one class that is like a wrapper for Axios that has like Laravel resource.
Okay, explain this to me because this does seem really interesting. I looked at it just briefly, but help me understand. So you actually have a little, is it a little class that you can call? So it's almost like a model in JavaScript. Is that what it is?
Yeah, basically. So it's like at the top of my thing, I'll say like import resource from ES6 resource client, you know?
Okay.
And then if I need, like say I need all the users, I'll just say resource, resource.index users. And say I need to create a user, I'll say like resource.store users, comma, and then pass a user object. Yeah. So it's basically like all of the like very like, so I took all of the method names out of the resource controller that like could hit a database and turn them into
JavaScript.
That seems
so much, that saves so much time because I find myself having to do that, right? Like construct these same things over and over.
Yeah, and you end up with these Axios calls like all over your app, and
that's genius.
It just gets weird.
I love that.
That's nice.
It reminds me of like kind of anytime I use Guzzle, I always like kind of hide it away behind a gateway. Like so, I'll have a class called Gateway that I call, and that will hold all of my calls to anything, you know, anything that is using Guzzle is going to call that gateway. And it makes it way easier. Like I know anytime I have one of those Guzzle calls, I just need to go to my gateway directory. And that's where all my Guzzle calls are going to live. That's interesting. I'm going to have to check that out. I'm definitely going to use that.
For the record, I'm not against the resource route. So I'm just purely against that resource route resource method. I want index, create, edit, update, destroy. Right. I just don't want route resource.
Yeah.
Is there an argument here? I did not hear this.
Yeah, it depends on the size of that routes file, though. If you've only got a handful of routes, then it's, you know, just be explicit about it. Especially if you're going to use, for me, I've really started using the fluent route definitions now. And it just looks nicer to have route get, route pat, route patch, route put, route whatever in there. And then chain it all together.
So this fluent route definition thing you speak of, you can chain like a get and a post in the same statement.
Not in the same statement. No, I'm saying I'd have like one route get, then you know arrow name, arrow users, whatever.
Right. Yeah.
And then you know route patch. Just and it's easy to look at that routes file. I mean, you can PHP artisan route list or whatever, but you're switching then from your editor to your terminal to look at the routes, and I think it makes sense just to look at it. The route resource is implicit, I guess, but I don't know.
I do agree, Michael.
And you could also do the resource only.
Yeah,
you've got only and except, but don't know.
Yeah, I have both in production. I use two different. You know, I have some projects that use Raw Resource and some that don't. My more recent projects, I list them out, and I'm more explicit about it. I think because I use implicit route model binding as often as possible anymore, just because I feel like it's so nice to not have to in the controller call find or fail.
Right.
And so since that's the case, sometimes I'll have to wonder like, oh, okay, what's the automatic thing that it's injecting here? Is it user or is it users? You know, and it's like, I don't ever have to wonder. I just go look at my routes file. Oh yeah, it's the placeholder is user. Okay. That's what the variable has to be in the controller method or, you know, whatever it might be. Is it photo or photos? Is it comments or commenting or whatever? I don't know, any weird crap that I come up with.
Well, like I said, on 20% time, I don't actually use Route Resource, for the record. Like, I'm a defender of it, but I never use it because I haven't found it like you.
I don't
well,
use
definitely,
it at work.
Yeah, not at work. But yeah, like it hasn't quite worked out for me. But I still hold this ideal that like all a Laravel app will be is middleware and route resources. And like, you know, like it's just like you can get so far middleware and route resources and I don't know, and implicit mount route binding and put all that together, and your controllers are just so bare. And then I don't know.
I'll find the tweet. I'm pretty sure Taylor has said that it's an anti-pattern or something like that and you shouldn't use it, and it's not documented, so I think that's all we need to say on the matter, really.
Case closed.
Oh man,
Caleb, one of these days I'm going to give you access to the Fragile repo on GitHub and you can just really enjoy that
Fragile
routes file.
What's
it's
Fragile?
It's a 4-line routes file.
Wow, that's beautiful.
Beautiful. What's Fragile? Is this a side hustle?
It's never going to make any money, so I wouldn't really call it a hustle, but it's like my programming mistress.
Nice.
It's where I get all of the satisfaction in my life. It's like any code that like I would never ask a client to pay me for, I do in Fragile. So I came out of like, I did like a lot of PM and stuff, and so I never found the right task manager. And so I started Fragile, which is an agile task manager that will break a lot because it's being used in production. and so I just have Fragile dot, what is it?
Let's all go
fragile.colborn.org or something. No, it's not even for sale. You can't buy it. It's just mine. You can't have it. but anyway, I use it to manage the tasks on itself. And I
That's
basically just
purpose.
Break it all the time
just,
and use it.
Yeah.
I use it as an exercise in
I'm registering right now.
In architecture.
I too have a mistress.
Oh no!
I'm literally registering. I found the route.
You're gonna have to share that.
God damn.
I found the route.
No. Why did I say that?
All right, I am.
I have a
registered. I am in. App, hold on.
A Laravel app mistress at the moment myself, and I'm interested if you guys do. So the latest in my Laravel fun is so this app, the routes file, there's no controllers in this app. It's one big routes file and they're all closures completely.
You can't cache that. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Like I started writing it and I'm like, you know what? What the heck? Like, why not? And let's just see how far it goes. And if it's, I don't know. So
it's the index.php framework.
Yeah, the index.php framework, right.
So what is it? What's it accomplish?
It's like a budgeting app. So the idea, like, you guys ever heard of Mint? Like personal capital, things like that. The idea is you just, so I don't have to pay for all the credit card links. You use Mint and then you export your transactions from Mint and you just import it into this app. And it's just my own personal way of managing money. It's called the Money Machine. And eventually I'd like to get it to a point where I can have other people use it. But for me, it's, you know, yeah. But
that's
cool. One big routes file, web.php. It's where
How long have you been working on it for?
Like 3 weeks. So
okay. All right. That's not bad. I've got a project.
This is the app that you did this screen share with Matt on?
No. That's a different thing that didn't quite get off the ground. Right. That was more for like taxes and stuff. This is this is just my own thing. Like I basically have a spreadsheet that does this. And so I thought I'll turn it into a Laravel app.
Nice.
Yeah.
By the way, I am always amazed. Every year I use TurboTax to do my taxes. I'm like, the people who created this must be geniuses because it's so I mean, I can't imagine how difficult it must be with all the different states and all the different rules and all the different things. And it's not a complete disaster. Like, it works.
Right.
Unbelievable. And it's good. And the UI is good. And I can come back. I can, like, literally close the window, nuke my session in the middle of the thing, come back, and it's exactly where I left off. Totally. It's just a great piece of software. So I kind of take some inspiration from that, actually, because the industry that I work in, there's a lot of freaking forms and a lot of freaking fields. Mm. And TurboTax has the same, I mean, it's all fields and forms, right? But they somehow make it feel really good. Mm. Like, you feel like you have a tax professional, like, holding your hand and guiding you through it and like, oh, hey, don't forget about this. And hey, let's go back a step. I think you missed this piece. And it all just feels so good. So sometimes I like kind of log in there and like look around and just like take some inspiration from what they do, like from TurboTax. It seems like an unlikely source, but it really is. It's a solid piece of software.
Yeah, that's a good call.
The thing that I'm kind of working on the side is it's called Sleuth, and it is a dependency. It's like it checks your dependencies to make sure that none of them are vulnerable. So there is a couple other things that do this. I'm hoping to build some intelligence around it so that it's not just a list of vulnerable packages, but also things like, hey, you're using a library that literally has 3 stars. Are you sure you want to be using this? Or you're using something that hasn't been updated in 3 years, you know, or something like that. And kind of just giving you feedback on the dependencies that you're consuming in your application. It was a little bit scary. Like, Daniel, you guys were talking about a 20% time when you were talking about the auto loading, and you were like, great, I can just change my, change my service provider and nuke your application. Right. Like when you update it.
Right.
So that sort of stuff, that is really scary to me. And like, again, the industry I work in, it's like, we're very much like audited and like very under a lot of compliance stuff. And so it's really important for us to be able to say with confidence, yes, I can show you a green check mark that says that all of our dependencies are solid. You know, we are using good dependencies.
Is it specifically for PHP?
Yes.
Okay. So is it like a wrapper? Like, is it just checking the composer.json?
Yeah, the composer.lock file, actually. It would be like required that you'd have a lock file, because otherwise, really, there's no way for me to know what version of a dependency you have. You know, you have to have a lock file, or else it's just whatever a composer happens to grab the next time you update.
It'd be cool if you built a CLI for it that wrapped around composer, so you could do like sleuth require a thing, and then before it actually required it, it would like basically like run it through a series of checks and be like, you sure about this? Like, because that is what, that's the best time to find out that you're using a bad package, is like right before you use it. Instead of, you know, once you've written 1,000 lines of code that depends on it.
That's a really good point.
Phase two.
Yeah, phase two. So like it would be a continuous integration sort of thing. So it would happen on any pull requests or any pushes in. It would actually integrate with GitHub. That's been a really interesting part of it, because I want to make it integrate with GitHub and GitLab and Bitbucket and stuff. And how they handle the continuous integration stuff is really, I think, quite different on each platform. And so they've got these statuses. I'm sure, do you guys use like anything? You guys use Travis or Style CI or anything like that at Titan?
Codeship.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, does Codeship handle the whole pipeline flow for you? Does it do all of the continuous integration stuff, or does it push to GitHub, like those statuses?
You're talking the wrong guy. Daniel?
Yeah, I don't know. Everything I do is for one client, and they handle all the CI stuff.
So like on GitHub, if you make a pull request and you have like CI tools, kind of.
Right.
Yeah, I've done like Travis and
Jenkins. Yeah, so you know how if you're doing a pull request, you'll get like a little green checkbox or something. It'll like run your test and then gives you a little green checkbox. That's what this would do too. So it would run during your pull request or before you do a. You can actually do two, right? So you can say like, if I pull request this, like, so check my pull request and make sure that all those dependencies are good. And then you can also have a push. So when I push this into the branch that I'm asking to push it into, is that going to be good still? So it can do both of them. And it'll come back and it'll give you a little green checkbox. And if it's not, then you can go see why it's failing. And then you could make a quick fix PR and merge that in, and then it would fix it for you.
Sweet.
So, yeah. So that's the goal. It's getting close. I'm hoping to have a beta version out by Laracon.
Nice.
At least for GitHub.
For the science fair? Are you going to debut it? The science fair.
The science fair. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's awesome. Do we have any news on that? Go ahead, Mike.
No, I was just about to say, I haven't really heard anything about the science fair at all. I've tweeted about it a couple of times, but you know, I know Jake's working on Sleuth and that, but I don't really know. Like, I guess David Hemphill will talk about push Silver and the stuff that he's been doing. Maybe Adam will talk about. But at the same time, I think maybe they're sort of a bit beyond the science fair phase of of those projects. So not sure. I'm sure we'll see something cool, but everyone's been pretty quiet about it so far.
Yeah, definitely.
So, Michael, any side hustles for you?
I've been thinking about it. You know, I've talked a bit about this WordPress thing that I wanted to do, and I think it's probably, given that I haven't started it, it's probably too much of an undertaking for a first attempt. But in the light of the conversations that we've been having, and you and I, and in the last couple of weeks, and even today, talking about looking how other people write code and just learning things that way, I've got an idea around... Laracast obviously teaches people how to use the framework. I want to do a few like short 3-5 minute videos around how I actually use the framework, more from the perspective of having people watch like how I go about it, more so than, you know, this is how to use the framework, more like this is just how I write code using the framework. So talking about, you know, you were talking about models and how you lay them out on 20% time.
Yep.
So I've got a way that I go about that. So to just talk about the way that I'd lay out a model, why I make those decisions and that kind of stuff, why I do certain things in an application, and sort of build up a base repository around that. So yeah, that'll just be a free thing of short videos that people can may or may not be interested in subscribing to.
I think that's awesome.
That's awesome. You should keep it updated too as you change your mind on
things. Yeah, and that happens a lot. You know, and I said on...
It'd be cool to like diff it year over year, you know?
It'd be interesting to differ on videos, but I certainly want to keep it up to date. Like if anything changes, I'm like, okay, so I did this, but now here's a new way of thinking about it. You know, new versions of Laravel come out, so there's different ways of doing things, and it's cool just to document that, the thought processes, as much as anything.
Yep.
Yeah.
But you know, as I said on Laravel News last episode, Jake, that so much of the community learns Laravel from Laracast now, so there's it's really a single train of thought, but different environments, different pressures, different stresses of different jobs lead you to make different decisions. So it's cool. And, you know, it'd be really cool if more people did it. I know it's, you know, it's an undertaking in and of itself to sit down and record screencasts and then upload them and release them and then announce them to the world, I guess. But it'd be cool to see lots of different people's ways of working, because it's interesting to see the thought processes around it, more so than just here is the finished product. It's nice to see the journey on how people got there.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree. One thing, so Adam had put out that blog post about how he launched refactoring to collections, and he had some tips on there about launching your own product. And he talked about a Tripwire product and kind of this thing like you sell for like $3, right? And just somebody's going to be more inclined to buy from you if they've bought something for you for $3 and it delivered, you know, exactly what it was. Yeah. So it almost like just putting a very small price tag on it, be like, I don't even know if you would do that like for this particular thing, if you could say like, buy my best practices for $2 or something.
And this is the other thing, right? The Tripwire product. And listening to the more recent episodes of Full Stack Radio and just David and Adam talking about launching a product, I've seen more value in sort of just building up a bit of an audience, building up a list of email addresses of people subscribed to it, just to go, you know, here's this thing for free. I'm not asking you to invest a whole bunch of time. I'm certainly not asking you to invest any money in it, but just to see if there's actually anyone out there willing to listen to me by myself without having to ride along on Jake's coattails.
Oh goodness.
I had like, speaking of like micro pricing things, I had this idea today while I was sitting in a coffee shop. I started trying to go to find a like message board post inside of a project inside of one of two base camps that I'm part of in Basecamp. And I don't know if you know this. I'm sure you do if you've ever used Basecamp. Their permalinks are disaster. Like, they have the ugliest routes ever. And so I was like, I really wish that I could just type like basecamp.com/client name/messages enter, right? Yeah. And be there. But I can't. And so like I have to like go click 5 times to get there. So I just bought bcamp.li today. And I'm like just building like a little redirector where it's like log in with Basecamp. Like we'll graph all of your, you know, project names and stuff. And just like I'm building a little redirector. And I was like, I wonder if someone would pay me $10 a year for this. Like, just give me $10 and for the next year, you'll have pretty URLs. $10 lifetimes.
Just $10 infinities.
Yeah, $10 lifetimes, except it may go away at any point. So
yeah, yeah. I've actually had decent success with something that I built that was like scratch my own itch sort of thing called Markdown to Medium.
Yeah, where I saw that.
Yeah, so I had the unfortunate situation of I had posted a blog post and I wanted to put it on Medium because I feel like Medium gets so much more traction, and it really does. It's the best thing about Medium is the audience. It exposes you to people that you would never be able to talk to otherwise because there's so many people looking on Medium for articles. And so it was like hashtag Vue.js and it like blew up. It was like probably my most read article of all time ever. Wow. But there was a lot of code blocks in it. And I was like, the code blocks in Medium are nasty. They look horrible. They're just a gray chunk of text, and I really wanted syntax highlighting. So I was like, okay, how do you do this? So it turns out you have to take that code block, you have to save it in a gist, and then you have to paste the link of that gist into your Medium post and then press enter, and it will then inject a little gist code block.
And destroy embed your gist. Exactly. You know, interesting. Public, like gist repository.
Yeah. And so I was like, this is annoying because I had a ton of them. I had a ton of code blocks. So I was like, there's got to be a better way to do this. Or I'm never going to do this again kind of thing. And so, I just built this Markdown to Medium where you paste in your Markdown and it will go look for any triple back ticks, and it will take those and extract them and create gists for you and then paste those links back in where those back ticks were. And then it will create a new gist for you that was your original Markdown replaced with those links. And then it gives you a little URL to copy. And then you just, it has a link and it says, go to Medium and paste this in. And you paste it and there's your new Medium link, and it's got all your syntax highlighting in there with little code blocks. That's awesome. So cool. But it took me like, I don't know, probably a couple weeks of, not a couple weeks of like whatever, just a couple nights maybe, over a couple weeks, because I was just trying to find the time. And I've had probably like 900 to 1,000 people use it.
Wow.
And nice. So it's been really nice. But what I'm hoping it will be for me is not necessarily a tripwire product where I get people to buy it, but more like Ian, who was talking about on Full Stack, like just a place where you can essentially get emails, you know? So when I'm ready to launch something, I can say, hey, you've used something that I made before. If you're interested, I'm starting this other thing. Like if you'd like to be on my email list, just do this, right? I figure I've earned one email from these people.
Yep. Yeah.
So it costs me like nothing.
That's awesome.
It works pretty well. So anyway, it's been fun.
Yeah.
To see that kind
anytime
of
it comes
working.
Up, people will mention it every now and then. I'm like, markdown to medium.com. This solves that problem that you're about to have. So
that's awesome. I had this one thing that I don't know if this is worth building. I'm only bringing it up here because I hope someone else will go build it because I don't have time. But I was just thinking the other day how great it would be if you could point a branch of a Git repo at something, and it would just generate, it would take all of the bodies of your commits, so the titles of your commits, and turn them into like H2s, the bodies of your commits and turn them into P's, and then insert the code blocks of like the diffs of your commits in context. And I could just point a branch and like generate basically most of my blog post just from like commits and code diffs. And then, you see what I'm saying?
I think so. Would you have to specifically make the branch for the purpose of...
Yeah, for the purpose of the blog post.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's like if I wanted to show like... So, for example, I'm working on like a Relay.js blog post right now. And so I took Fragile from like this like very reacty, resourcey, you know, Axios calls and everything place. And then I basically created a branch and like transitioned it to use Relay.js with GraphQL backend. So it's like it's just one branch of my app where I like made this big change. And so I don't want to go through and like show everyone through my entire app, but I do want to show them like everything. Like I can show them like, hey, in the beginning, here's what it looked like. And then like, here's all of the changes I made. And like, I could just take my commit bodies and throw them in as like justification for each change, you know, and then get to the end. So I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of the blog posts I want to write are just like, hey, like here's a Laravel install. Now, like, here's, you know, 15 commits worth of changes, and then you're at the end of the blog post, you know?
I think your biggest challenge might be educating the people as to how to use it. Like, you'd have to have some clear instructions on, and or, you know, could I use it for a blog post where I wasn't interested in showing diffs? Like, all I wanted to show was, like, heading to, here's the blog post portion that is, like, the body of my commit, and then here is a block of three pieces of code, like, three blocks of code. And then next H2... Yeah. And then whatever, and then three new pieces of code, right? Like, Yeah, that sounds genius, though. That's a really interesting, it's a really interesting idea.
And it's like, it would take, like, you would still have to go through and, like, edit it, but, like, just by writing the code and, like, writing good commit messages,
you
would basically end up with, like, 3/4 of a blog post.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you're listening, bored person out there, please build this.
Yeah. call it branch to blog post. There you go. Millions. You'll make millions. At least.
You'll get some emails.
Because I know we're wrapping up in a bit, question. So we're talking about products. We're talking about, we referenced Adam and his, you know, and Tripwire products and followings and email lists and things like that. Where do you guys, how are your thoughts in this realm? So there's a lot of this buzz going about, and so we're all following Adam, and then he makes a bunch of money, and, you know, like ConvertKit and his blog, and like I read his blog, I signed up for his emails, everything like that. And then I'm inspired to do the same thing. And so, but he sort of, you know, he definitely speaks out about like motives and intentions in tweets and things like that, talking about, you know, like having the right motives, being pure in your desire to help people. And then Mohammed, I think, retweeted something today, or tweeted, like Adam said something like, great people are people who, you know, who are just there to help, and they have to make money so they can do stuff for free, or something like that. So anyway, personally, like, I feel very conflicted in this realm. I want to act with the right motives. I don't think I'm necessarily doing this. Like, I don't feel like I'm using the Twitter community to build up myself and my shrine and things like that. But that is what you're doing in a way. You know, you are in, like, I'm sharing these tips and I'm doing it so that they'll get traction. And, you know, like growth hacking, hashtag growth hacking, like that's the dirty part of it. So anyway, I find myself constantly kind of battling this thing and questioning myself, and I want to hear what your guys' thoughts are on it, and if this is something you think about, or where you think the community is at with these things. I don't know. What do you got?
Who wants to start?
Yeah, I'll go. I mean, I've been doing this now for, I guess, actively probably a year and a half, and look, a lot of it has just been getting a name out. Like, I like to teach things to people. I don't necessarily think that I'm a good teacher as such. Like, I'm not a Jeffrey or an Adam or even a Matt in terms of teaching. But I think I've always found it very valuable to share things that I learn. I don't think there's any reason to sort of keep it a secret. We're all struggling. There's always going to be yesterday's Michael somewhere in the world tomorrow, right? So if you can help just one other person, and I guess encourage them to help another person learn, it's good. I don't necessarily think of it as a way to, you know, it feels kind of slimy to go, you know, I'm gonna do all this stuff for free so that I can get people to help out in the future, you know, to buy something or whatever. Personally, I don't think I can commit to invest the time to do that, to build something that people would then pay for later, right? So a lot of it for me is genuinely like helping people out. That's why Jake and I guess started initially the North Meet South podcast, was just to share our experiences as, you know, people that are just general developers, what we're learning, what we're doing, problems we're overcoming. And then people would learn from that. And then that led on to us taking over the Laravel News podcast. And we're doing the same kind of thing, right? We're taking our time to share with people things that are happening on, you know, in the community. So I don't really think of it too much in terms of like building that up. That I think that's just a nice side effect. It happens organically. And, you know, if I can capitalize on it in some way down the track, I don't think that people would get like funny about it, just based on what I have seen from the community already on the back of what other people have done.
Right.
Yeah. I think, I don't know, a lot of, like, I am definitely like, I make no bones about the fact that, like, when I'm out there doing the things that I am doing, like, I hope they grow. And like, I hope that, you know, I hope my Twitter followers go up. I hope I get more podcast listeners. I hope all the things. Like, I'm very, like, pretty open about that. And, like, if you ever listen to Fits and Starts, it's, like, mostly me, like, berating myself for being such an arrogant piece of shit. But, but I think the thing is, like, my motive, I very, very much don't think that I'm gonna like go Adam Wathen and, you know, make 700 grand doing, you know, video courses or whatever.
Yeah,
700 million doing video courses. like, I that's not my motive. But like, a big part of what I do want is, like, I grew up on the internet, and there's, like, these people, like, I admired on the internet from childhood who were, like, out there living on the internet as, like, public people, and, like, the community of, like, people who were all aware of each other on the internet was, like, this really, really cool thing that I, like, observed as a kid. And so, like, that's one of the reasons, like, talking to Anil Dash on or something is, like, amazing for me, because it's, like, oh my god, like, I know you from when I was a kid, you were, like, a famous internet person, and then now I get to talk to you, you know. And it's like, and that, like, that thing that I always saw was, like, really, really appealing to me, right? And so in the Laravel community we have, like, a much smaller version of that, but it's like, oh my god, like, I listen to your podcast, podcast, like, it's this cool shit, you know. And it's like, it's just cool, you know. Like, I don't know, like, I mean, if you think about it too hard, your ego will get involved, you know? And, like, if you stare for too long at your Twitter follower count, like, your ego will get involved. Yeah. There's nothing you can do about it. But, like, for me, it's just, like, this is cool. Like, how is this not so cool that it's, like, all these people, like, who I knew about, now, like, some of them know about me. Like, oh, my God, Jeffrey Way followed me on Twitter. My life is over. Right. Like, what the hell? You know? Like, these things, like... it's insane. Yeah. It's just insane, you know? Like, it's just fun. And so, like, for me, like, maybe it's a dopamine hit of, like, of arrogance, but it feels like more just like a dopamine hit of, like, adrenaline of, like, oh my god, like, this is the mountain I wanted to climb. These are the people, you know?
That's a good take.
So, I don't know.
I just realized Jeffrey Way is not following me. I'm so sad.
Go get it, dude. Get it.
Jeffrey, just follow me.
You can do
Come on. I'm gonna take a tip. I realize Matt Stauffer had a 5-minute geek show episode where he said that he realized that he processes externally, and that was a really helpful thing for me to hear, because my brain is a million places. Like, when I hear this question, I'm like, I don't have a well-formed thought on this, because I don't know that I've ever really taken the time to think about it. But talking about it out loud helps me to figure out what I think about it. So I'll probably ramble a little bit, but I'll give you my thoughts, I suppose.
Standard.
Yeah. I think for me, it's almost some sort of validation. You know, I kind of have always enjoyed doing computers and HTML and whatever, you know, back in the day when I was just starting. But, like, I had no idea what I was doing. Never had any formal training, just like many people. Went to school to be went to college to be, like, a math teacher, right? And never thought I could make a career out of doing this stuff. So I think my first opportunity to kind of get involved and be like, I wonder what it would be like to kind of code with some of these big dogs, right? I think so. Matt Stauffer is, like, the first repository that I pull requested. It was super intimidating for me to even pull requests.
Yeah.
Because I was like, oh man, he's going to think my code is crap and like whatever. And then I got, like, some really good feedback, and I was like, oh my gosh, like, he's talking to me. This is so cool. Like, free code reviews from, like, these people that I idolize. And so I kept on going with that, and I was like, met Matt at Laracon, and I was like, oh, this is really cool. Like, I get to actually meet these people, and they, like, know who I am because I contributed to that. So I guess it's not like, I don't feel like I'm earning favors necessarily, but I feel like I'm earning credibility. Do you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So when people look at the things that I've done, they can for themselves and for me maybe say, like, okay, like, he's doing these other things, like, he contributed to this repository, he does these podcasts, he's said these couple things, I've seen a couple of tweets on his on Twitter. Hopefully eventually I get to a point where people will be like, okay, he kind of knows what he's talking about. So I think for me that's more what it is. Like, I need to be validated. And I think like, for me, there's this book called The Seven Love Languages, and, like, words of affirmation is, like, a big one for me. Like, I need, not that, like, I need to be constantly affirmed, but it helps me to be like, okay, like, you can do this. Like, it helps me kind of get rid of that imposter syndrome, right? To hear, like, oh yeah, this is good, or to get another like on Twitter. So yeah, I'll stop there.
No, that's cool.
I have two more things that are quick, and then we really need to wrap up because I got to get out of here. But two quick things. Number one, I really enjoyed that blog post that Adam wrote, and we'll link it in the show notes, where he went through, you know, step by step, everything that he went through in launching his products. The thing that I had to ground myself on with that, though, is that that is not going to work for everyone. You know, not everyone's going to have $100,000 idea. Not everyone is going to ship that thing. And so it's important for me to realize that, as nice it would be to do that, it's not. It can't be about the money at the end of the day. So that thing really grounds me. The other thing I should have written down because I have forgotten what it was now. So.
Oh, no.
And that's going to be the show. It's going to be like, and there we go. Yeah. And we forgot. And perfect. All right.
And we're out.
One thing.
I will just say for Michael and myself, we are huge fans of what you guys are doing. Keep doing it. You guys are doing killer stuff on Twitter, on 20% Time, on Fits and Starts. We love all the stuff you guys are doing. So keep going with it.
That's crazy. Yeah.
Thanks, man. Yeah, yeah. No, we were both listening
right.
to
it's
you
very
guys
much
before
the
we were doing anything.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
for sure.
So it's cool that
yeah,
you guys.
This is definitely like a status thing, not a status thing. Like a whoa, this happened. Like, guys, like they asked us. It's not. Yeah, we're honored. It's thank you. Yeah, appreciate it.
Yeah.
A ton.
Our pleasure. Yeah, keep. Totally. Like I said, every Friday on my way home from. From work, I always look forward to listening to your guys' stuff. So some super good discussions there. It'll be super fun to hang out with you guys in New York this year, too. Are you guys both coming?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Great. Great. And you were there last year, weren't you, Caleb? Were you there last year, Daniel?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh.
No, I was not. My work.
Caleb, I remember seeing you there, I think. I don't know if we got formally introduced, but like
we
I remember.
We hung out a little bit. Okay. Yeah, we talked in front of the stairs.
Okay.
Yeah, it cool. happened.
Just a quick move on. Yeah,
we
shared a long romantic stare. My hand brushed yours as we walked past.
And I pulled out my little steno book and I checked
Jacob
off
Bennett. Jacob Bennett. Yeah. Good times.
So funny. All right. Sounds good. All right. Thanks, guys. I don't want to keep you too much longer, and Michael included. Thank you so much for coming on and talking with us. It's been awesome. We love you guys.
Back at you.
Love you.
Thank
too.
You. Love you too.
Good night. Bye. All right,
guys. Good
see you later.
See you guys. Bye.
Wanted to also take a quick minute to thank Spasi again for sponsoring our podcast this week and take a quick moment to talk about one of their amazing open source projects that they have out there free for you to use. This one is called URL Signer. And it is super handy. It creates a secured URL with a limited lifetime. I have had to do this a lot of times. And it's really simple. So you just say URL signer, arrow, sign, and then you provide the URL of the link that you want to sign, and then the time limit, so 30 days or something like that. And what it will do is it will create a URL for you that you could share with your users. When they come to visit that, you just validate the link using the same library, URL signer validate, you pass in the URL that they gave you. And if it's validated, then you pass them along. And if it's not validated, then you just abort. And it makes it really, really simple to do this. So check that out if this is something that you need to do, creating secured URLs with a limited lifetime. Thanks again to Spasi for sponsoring our show.
And there you go. That wraps episode 31 of the North Meets South web podcast with Caleb Porzio and Daniel Colborn. We did actually realize after finishing the recording that this was our 1 year birthday episode as well. So happy birthday to us, and thanks to all of our wonderful listeners for sticking around. If you do enjoy the show, please feel free to leave us a 5-star rating or review in iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. It is always, always appreciated. Your feedback means the world to us. If you'd like to ask us a question or have a suggestion for a future show, you can reach us at North South Audio on Twitter or on our personal Twitter accounts. And show notes for this episode will be at northmeetsouth.audio/31.
Okay, Michael, how do you want to do this? You want to say, hey, I'm Michael. I say, I'm Jake. And then Daniel and then Caleb. And then you can say,
so, yeah.
Okay, we'll do that. Okay.
Wait, I'm recording. Let's do a clap or something just in case this gets super fucked up.
Don't even worry about it. This happens every week. Okay. I have like a lag because of like
Australia.
And
because Australia.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because Australia. Equator.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
Okay, so go ahead, Michael.
Hey, I'm Michael Dorinda.
And I'm Jake Bennett.
I'm Caleb Porzio.
Oh, you guys can do
it. I just found our outtake. Great.
Yeah. wonderful.
So, right, here we go. We're going to try this again. It's going to be Michael, Jacob, Daniel, and then Caleb.
All right.
Okay, here we go.